LinkedIn presents.
Ultimately, my opinion on D&I, I always put the I first, and you kind of said it a few times, which is inclusion. I think for companies overall, if you include more people, it's going to be better for your employees, and you're going to be able to then go into new markets as well, because you're going to have more of an inclusive approach. But I think overall, there's still a lot of work to be done, and it's infinite. It doesn't stop. So those that really care about will continue fighting the good fight and driving things forward.
That was EQ Buddy founder and CEO Marcus Sawyer. And in this conversation, we go deep in all things AI and the intersection of AI and inclusion. We dig into Marcus's deep background in technology innovation, specifically in recruiting tech. We cover the power of community and recruiting, and we grab our crystal ball and look into the future of AI's impact on how we recruit and the broader world of work. And we'll be right back with that conversation after a brief word from our sponsor. People have always been the key to unlocking business performance. Never has that been more true than today. I'm Lars Schmidt, and this is the Redefining Work podcast. In each episode, we speak with business leaders who are influencing modern work and people practices. This podcast is your key to understanding the link between business performance and progressive people strategies. And if you're a people leader wanting to have an impact on your business, I encourage you to join our community for progressive people leaders at amplifiedtalent.com/community. This community is unlike anything you've experienced before. Want more direct insight? Here are some words from community members Chloe Sesta Jacobs, Noah Warder, and Balbina Knight.
The caliber of humans that I have met in this group is like nothing I've experienced before.
It is truly the safest community I've ever been a part of.
One of the things I love so much about the Amplify community is having the opportunity to connect with a global group of peers.
And if you're a business leader on the market for a transformative people leader, be sure to check out our HR executive search services at amplifytalent.com. Now, onto the show.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Hey everyone, welcome to the LinkedIn Presents Redefining Work podcast. I'm your host, Lars Schmidt. And today we are going to be talking about a lot of things, but we're going to be talking about two topics that are certainly front of mind for many of us right now, which is AI and DEI. And there are a few people better suited to have this conversation than today's guest, Marcus Sawyer. So Marcus is the founder and CEO of EQ.app. He is the former president of the Adecco Group X. He is somebody who has spent his career in innovation and kind of emerging markets and tools and resources. And that is a wealth of perspective that I'm excited to dig into for all of you in the next 30 minutes. So Marcus, how are you, man? Welcome to the show. Let's have you open with an introduction for the audience.
Well, firstly, Lars, thanks for having me. I'm doing great and just excited to have this discussion. Just as an opening, I mean, you've done a great job there. If I was to add any more color, I've spent around 18 years in HR tech and recruiting. So looking at everything that is going to be in the new frontier and how we innovate around that or in that. So I spent 10 years at careerbuilder.com when people were advertising in these things called newspapers. There was this big discussion around whether or not the internet would be a thing for people to advertise jobs. So that was kind of like my first, I want to say, time in HR tech and recruiting and kind of looking at what's next. And I started in Europe. So as you can probably tell, I've got a London accent. So I spent the majority of my career there and then moved to the Adecco Group to lead digital transformation and innovation, which meant we were buying, building and investing in HR tech companies all around the world. And more recently, turned my attention to a really important topic to me, which is inclusion, but also with AI. So ensuring that we include people in the next wave, in the next generation of work by building EQ.app, which started as a community first and now provides an AI companion for recruiters to save time.
Yeah. Well, I definitely want to, I have a lot of questions about EQ.app. But let's do a little bit of level setting for the audience before we kind of dig into that. And let's start with just the current state of AI. And I feel like the pace of AI is moving so fast right now, we have to timestamp this conversation. So we're recording this in early April. When this runs, it will not be early April. I'm sure there'll be some new advancements and news and trends at that point. But, you know, beginning of April, beginning of Q2, describe the current state of AI. You've been working in this space for a while. You've obviously seen it evolve. You've seen the rapid shift of it. And obviously coupled with your experience in HR tech, I would love to just get your perspective. Like when you are talking to people about the state of AI today, specifically in kind of HR and the world of work, how do you describe it? Where are we?
So I'll give you the headline first and then I'll back into that. I think we're at greenfield, blue ocean opportunities within AI, within our space in particular. So 5 years ago, I'd done a talk for LinkedIn around the future of recruiting and future of AI. And I made some predictions. And it's random that they've come out 5 years later. But the predictions were we would have the ability to have our own models that we would train. Those models would perform tasks for us. And we've seen a lot of that. We all know the big names that have been in the AI space. But I think more recently, the state has been for companies. I'm going to talk about different stakeholders. At a company level, hey, like we've got to get this in our quarterly meetings and our quarterly reports. We've got to talk about it. So there was a big PR push, I think, overall, right, for general companies. Then I think what you've started to see is now we've talked about it, what are we going to do about it? So now there's a lot of auditing going on inside of organizations where they're trying to figure out where the wins are. Is it an efficiency play or is it a net new opportunity? Now that trickles down to the employees, obviously, because every company is made up of individuals. And the employees are kind of trying, there's some uncertainty, as we know. Like, what is this going to mean for my job? Is this going to exist? And within TA, we sit, we sit somewhere in between that, right? Like, we're managing the company expectations, then trying to manage the employee expectations. And if you're a global TA leader, you're managing your team's expectations. So I think that there's a lot of research going on. There's a lot of development happening right now. And then people are trying to figure out the most practical use cases that are relevant to their industry and then also relevant to their business. So that's where I feel we are today. And then there's this kind of like barrage of like separating wheat from the chaff, like all this information coming that you constantly like, is it real? Is this going to take our jobs? Is this not? So there's a bit of that going on as well. So a bit of uncertainty, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, you work with a ton of recruiters and you come from this space and you know AI in the context of recruiting as well as anybody. Like what use cases are you excited about? Because I think, you know, there's an infinite number of use cases, right? Like you can use these tools to do almost anything. Should you? Absolutely not. There are some things you definitely shouldn't use it for, but there are a lot of very practical use cases. And I'm curious to get your perspective. Like what are some of the things that our audience who is involved in recruiting should be thinking about ways that they can leverage these tools today?
Yeah, and I'll answer the question and I'll try and think about it maybe in a slightly different way on how I suggest people should think about what the use cases are that make sense for them. And I always come up with the framework is like four P's. Purpose, what are you trying to achieve? Like, what are you really trying to get done at company level and maybe at department level within recruiting? And then the problem that you're trying to solve. And I'll give a specific one. Let's say the problem is there's just too much admin. Our recruiters are not spending enough time with stakeholders. They're not spending enough time speaking to the right candidates. So once you've got that down, then you want to think about the people who's involved in that AI and then profit. How are you going to make money from it? So I think some of the use cases are, again, where there's high frequency administration work, how do you remove that? Generating job descriptions, really easy one, making those jobs inclusive, converting those jobs into job ads, and then taking those ads and distributing them to the right places and targeting applicants. A lot of that we've actually been doing behind the scenes for a long time. A few companies have had access to that intel and information. I think we're going to start to see more, instead of more push, more pull, meaning we'll go out and find and pinpoint these purple squirrels that no one was able to find. And I look at AI as a way of, in a recruiting industry, our business is all about wisdom and knowledge. How do we take data and take that data, transform it into information that's useful? And we've had this information on sites like Google, different platforms. Take that information, transform it into insights, And then once you've got those insights, make sure that your department's knowledgeable about what you're doing so you can drive wisdom. And I think that you do that by getting down to the insights that you want as quick as possible and then distributing that to the right stakeholders at the right time. So a lot of it is taking the administration work out so you can spend more time building relationships and building better experiences for your stakeholders and your candidates. And I'm curious from your side as well, like what are you seeing and what are you hearing that's going on in the market as well?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that there's some practices that are easy to kind of implement now. Like, for instance, you know, Will Blaze, who's a recruiter, I'll you know, credit him for this because he's the one who shared it. He created a custom GPT to get aggregate feedback from candidate interviews and then package that feedback in an anonymous, proactive way. Like, you know, he shared the prompt that he created to do this. So basically, if, you know, you interview five candidates on site, you're going to make an offer to hopefully one who accepts. That's four people you're rejecting. And typically we're kind of not great at providing feedback that's actionable for those candidates. And we're not really thinking about candidate experience, especially in this environment where recruiters tend to be overwhelmed with applicants. He created a custom prompt that basically would allow them to enter the greenhouse notes from the interview teams for people who they rejected. The prompt would compile the notes in a way that made it actionable feedback, pros, cons, et cetera, that he could then share back to candidates. And I thought that was a really clever use case. Basically, he had ChatGPT Plus, created a custom GPT for it, and then open sourced that. And so again, like that's something if you're like, hey, conceptually, I get it, but like specifically, practically, what can I do? Like that's something you can do now. And if you have ChatGPT Plus, you know, it's not putting that information that you're entering into the overall kind of external LLM. So from a privacy perspective, still take out any identifying information, but that was a really valuable use case. I saw another around basically compiling notes. So having intake notes when you're kicking off a search and you're meeting with all the different stakeholders, you've got a range of notes, using those notes, feeding those into ChatGPT or whatever tool you're using to create a job description. And then from the job description, create interview guides that could even be, for example, like values aligned, right? If you have structured interviews where you're trying to really have different people on the interview team dig into different value alignment based on the job description, you can do that. And you can leverage these tools to do that. You could do that manually as a human, but it's going to take you a lot of time, right? And so I think what a lot of these tools do now in recruiting and elsewhere is they kind of, I use the analogy that they give you a running start to a lot of what you want to do. Are they going to be turnkey and cut and paste? No, they're not. You're going to have human intervention. You're going to have to refine them. And there's issues with hallucination and things like that you have to be mindful of. But they can give you a running start at almost anything. And so those were just two kind of specific use cases that I saw recently that kind of caught my attention.
One of the things I think about is personalization at scale. And how do you, and to your point, like the interview guides or like making sure that you've got notes that are very specific for that particular conversation. Everybody, we all know about the black hole, like candidate applies, they hear nothing back, they don't know why. And I think if you can continue to leverage the AI to personalize at scale, that's when you start to build relationships. Research for us is a big thing. So before you go into meetings or calls for the intake calls, you know the situation. So you save more time in that discussion kind of level setting, right? Because that's always like 15 minutes of a call, right? At the start.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you say that. Like I generally use ChatGPT for a lot of my queries, but I started using Copilot a bit more. And what was interesting is, you know, Copilot is embedded now natively into Google Chrome. And so I was running a search in Google and I was looking up somebody who I was going to be meeting. And I have a custom GPT prompt to create like a dossier or a profile on individuals that I'm going to be meeting with so I can learn a bit more about their background and not have to do that research manually. So in this case, I just did it because I was looking for a specific thing. I just did a Google search and then I saw Copilot actually did that on the right side of the browser without me prompting. And I was like, this is actually pretty good. It's pretty good. So it's, you know, and again, I think we don't realize like how early we are in how AI will just become ubiquitous in the tools that we use. And I think as they become more integrated into our email, you know, decks, all these different tools that we're using, we're going to be interfacing with AI. We may not even know it, right? It's just going to be kind of seamlessly integrated.
Yeah, I think invisible AI is a thing and it's been a thing for a while, right? And as far as like the research. So I'd done the same for you before our meeting on EQ Buddy.
Yeah.
So we use that for research all the time, and it pulled in, okay, like these are the things that Luz done with Amplifier. This is what you've done with Ticketmaster. These are the, and so you get a full picture. And obviously, like, we've had conversations and I'm aware, but it's like a nice refresher. So then we can just hit the ground running and have the discussion. So I think AI should be there to support you in having more sensible, meaningful, and useful conversations with human beings.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, look, what I'm an aspect of AI that I'm bullish on, and we're not there yet, but I don't know how far away we are, is that career sites, I think, will become dynamic and conversational in nature. And, you know, I think when you look at how we recruit fundamentally today, really hasn't changed in 20 years, 30 years, right? Like, we used to advertise in the papers, you mentioned earlier, right? Now we have digital ads. We used to have paper resumes that we would print and hand you physically. You know, now we have digital resumes and LinkedIn and other tools. We still have humans kind of making the connections between all those things. But I think we're not that far off from career sites where basically you visit, I'm interested in a career at, let's say, you know, at EQ, I want to come work with you. And there's a chat interface that I'm basically having a conversation with. And hey, you know, upload your CV, upload your LinkedIn profile, upload any other links to blogs or things that you think would be pertinent to understand your background. What is it you're interested in? What do you like doing, right? Like, I think so much of the way that we recruit is like, let me look at a resume, which is usually a retrospective look at what you've done, and match that with a job description, which is an unrealistic, you know, overly dense things of wish list items that, you know, that this person will do, and making that connection. And I think in that near future where we're using conversational AI as part of the job engine, you know, through that conversational, maybe it's a 2 to 3 minute conversational chat, it will serve you up jobs that you knew that would be aligned with what you do, right? Like, I'm a software engineer, it's going to show me some software engineer jobs, but it's also going to identify transferable skills based on my experience and my interest and aptitude that are probably jobs I might not have thought about. And it's like, hey, but actually these other jobs you would be a 70% match for or an 80% match for. And I think to me, like, that's going to be the real kind of turning of the corner in recruiting, because we're not going to necessarily be so locked into like for like from a skills and job description standpoint. We are going to be able to identify potential fit for roles that open up new career opportunities to people. It broadens our talent pool. I'm excited for that. I don't have a timetable yet on that, but the way things are progressing, like, I don't think it's that far out. I mean, it may have sounded like science fiction 5 years ago. I don't think it is anymore. I mean, you're deeply embedded in HR tech. When do you think we're going to see something like that?
Well, I think a lot of it is happening as we speak. And you know, the big quote, right? The future is already here. It's just unevenly distributed.
Yeah.
And so there's somebody doing that right now, but right, not at any scale. And I think that's going to, one of the biggest question marks at the moment is adoption within AI. And you mentioned some really interesting points around things that are happening seamlessly behind the scenes, which I call invisible AI. And that's been happening forever on Amazon, Netflix, even in some of the matching. So on the consumer side, that's been happening. I think within our industry, there's going to be a reckoning that happens. And the reckoning is going to be, do we make this particular module invisible or do we make it transparent? And that's going to depend on who's operating the AI. Are recruiters operating the AI, or is this a senior leadership initiative to remove maybe what they would, to make that organization leaner? And we're seeing that happening a lot. And I think that's a question mark for those in TA, really, to try and figure out where are the jobs going to be. If you look inside of your organization, is your company hiring more logo designers, right? If they're creative, probably not. What you might do is you might have a head of design that is able to inspect the quality of that. So I think that there's going to be a lot of value in those folks and those individuals that are able to inspect what they expect. Lawyers, doctors, they're going to be training the AIs moving forward, and we're going to see this kind of vertical push. So I'm probably not answering your question directly, but what I would say is, like, skills-based hiring is going to be a thing for those that also operate the AI as well. And that's why we're so focused on recruiters, because we think they've got amazing skills that need to be amplified. Excuse the pun, but yeah.
the check is in the mail. I appreciate the plug. I want to transition to another topic that I know you're passionate about, which is inclusion. And I want to just kind of level set. It'll be a great segue to get into EQ. But before we do so, I just want to get your thoughts on the current state of DEI today. And, you know, I think as we're having this conversation, we're doing this in the backdrop of a lot of very loud and vocal pundits trying to come out and demonize DEI efforts, programs, and frankly, using, you know, the term DEI and taking that in the same way that they had taken the concept of woke and kind of weaponized that. And so we're in, I know this is a generational effort and progress is always both, you know, it's nonlinear, but I'm curious to get your perspective kind of today. Like, how do you kind of describe and see the state of DEI as we think about it from a kind of HR and recruiting and workplace standpoint?
Yeah, so if I think about DEI at large, I think there are some companies that have made these stances and stands and they're going to stick by them. And they are looking at ways of working in between the quote-unquote rules, as it were, right? And they are committed. But those types of companies were also committed for a long period of time. Then you've got maybe another population that was a little bit performative, or very performative, should I say, and looked at the PR of things that were going on and saying, okay, well, if we don't do something, we're going to be seen as this type of company and our employees may leave. And they were kind of doing it for the wrong reason. So they'd stick somebody in D&I or diversity and they would say, here you go, you've got to try and change things, but there's no budget and there's no support. And those are now falling behind and you kind of see them dying out. But people that have been in the space and really care about it are watching those companies and you're seeing it. And I actually think medium and longer term, that's going to be a really negative impact for those businesses, not just from a standpoint of like how they're viewed, but from a business standpoint. And I always lean into this. I think that diversity and inclusion has shown like many times that it's just better for business. And I always give the analogy of, look, if we're at a boardroom and we're looking at an object in the middle of the table and you're one side, I'm the other side, we need the other people on the left-hand side and the right-hand side to make out what that object is. And that's what inclusion provides, which is perspective. And so I think at the moment, you're going to have some companies that are going to lean into this. And I think longer term, they're going to be successful. And then there are going to be more some organizations that are now going to stop doing this and now jump on the next bandwagon. And basically, they'll see, okay, well, if it's business as usual, we'll be just fine. But I think they're going to struggle at some point. They're going to hit a glass ceiling. So I think right now, D&I has not got the momentum that it had historically. But at the same token, that's going to come to the detriment of some of those companies that aren't leaning into them. And also inside of the companies where you've hired maybe someone that is aware, they're conscious, they know what you're doing, that narrative is not going to look good for you when they leave also as well. But ultimately, my opinion on D&I, I always put the I first, and you kind of said it a few times, which is inclusion. I think for companies overall, if you include more people, it's going to be better for your employees and you're going to be able to then go into new markets as well because you're going to have more of an inclusive approach. But I think overall, there's still a lot of work to be done and it's infinite. It doesn't stop. So those that really care about will continue fighting the good fight and driving things forward.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise. A promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. A promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Hi, I'm Tomer Korn, LinkedIn's Chief Product Officer. On my podcast, Building One, we dive deep into what it takes to build great products. Recently, we had Zach Perret, the CEO of Plaid, and he shared about his struggles building a financial app for consumers and how he was able to turn it all around with a critical pivot. Take a listen.
I personally couldn't resonate as much with the consumer set that we were trying to reach. I just didn't have that level of empathy. When we made the shift to building a B2B product, though, I was building the product that I wanted. My co-founder and I were creating the product that we wanted ourselves, and we had so much empathy for what that product was.
Such a great insight.
You know, in that sense, we got lucky because we were creating a thing for ourselves. And then the people that we were talking to also had the same problems we did. They were fintech developers. We'd been a fintech developer. We'd been trying to build a fintech product for a year. And so we had such deep empathy. We had such a clear ability to...
If you want to hear more of Zach Perret's story and the lessons that follow, listen and subscribe to my podcast, Building One.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you're absolutely right. And particularly the fact that there's no end to this work. Like, there's no finish line. There's never a point where if you are committed to this work that you're like, oh, okay, we're there. We've reached our goals. That just doesn't happen. And let's kind of come back into the inclusion piece, because I know that was a big driver for you in creating EQ. So could you maybe just walk me through the origin story? Like, how did the platform come to be? I know you mentioned it started as a community, kind of grew to an app. Like, at what point was this kind of an idea in your mind? You were like, this may be something to explore, to, you know, you kind of getting out there and saying, yeah, that time is now. I'm gonna build this, and kind of give a bit of an overview of the evolution and where the product sits today.
Yeah, so I've always been somebody that's been big on bringing people together to achieve stuff that you cannot achieve as an individual. And when I was at Adecco, I got to a point where I was on boards. I was on a board at Microsoft Services. I was in a few other different boardrooms. And not particularly those places, but I just started to look around the people I was meeting. I just thought there was less and less people that had a similar background to me. And then COVID hit. And during that time, I had a lot of reflection time. I went on a lot of runs and I was just running every single day, and I was thinking and running. And I thought to myself, what am I really passionate about? And it's helping people at large. What do I know the recruiting industry, and where's there an opportunity? And the opportunity is to bring people in to something that could help them support themselves and support their families long term. So I firstly got a small group of people together. It started friends and family of people that I knew, and created like a community-based app where we would have discussions around things that are called the four C's, which were careers that were meaningful, conversations that could make a real difference to you, like whether that was in your life, and connections. How do you get connections to open doors, which ultimately led to capital? And I thought with that formula, there's something there to help people move to the next level. But you then needed the demand side. And the demand side was, who's going to hire? And I started consulting with some venture capital firms and a few other organizations around their D&I programs across their portfolios of companies. And what we noticed is that everybody said they wanted to do something but didn't know how. So my initial thought was to remove the barrier of, I don't know how. We will help you get access to talent from different backgrounds for mid to senior level roles. So that's how we started EQ initially. And the mission has always been empowering people to thrive. And that's really what we stand for. And we were making money and just driving revenue by being a permanent placement business on the back end, but automating a lot of those parts of it. So you'd have the community on one side. Then we would get job roles that would come in. We would then match those candidates to those positions. And we would do a process of sourcing, curation, and then introductions. So we were acting as the third introduction to our clients. But what we were doing to get that talent in is we were providing non-biased job descriptions. We were making sure that the filtering and the sourcing and ranking was in relation to the population of the United States in particular. We were making sure that we were removing as much bias as we could from the process. And we were partnering with a lot of staffing and recruiting firms at the time. We found that if we can do that internally, maybe there's a way to productize this. And then AI came back on the scene and we started to figure out all the processes that we were doing. What could we provide as a service to our clients so they could do this themselves internally? And this is where we had developed EQ Buddy. So last year, May, we started to take a hard pivot and started to move more into providing a product that companies could use for inclusion, but leveraging AI to find the best talent as well.
Yeah. So walk me through how that works. Like, if I'm working at a client using EQ Buddy, what is that experience like for me?
Yeah, so you have a conversational interface. You log in, you ask EQ Buddy a series of things that you would like to get done, whether that was generate a job description, and it will generate an inclusive job description in under 3 seconds for your particular type of role. If you want to then hit match, you can then source candidates that would match against those job descriptions. And then if you want to then reach out to them, there's a button in there which we call the easy button. You just press the easy button, it will generate a personalized message for you to outreach to them, and then you can get connected with them. So that's like one example of a flow. A lot of folks are also using it to find communities that are in their kind of area of expertise, whether it's their industry, that may not show up on things like Google. So we've basically indexed the entire internet, but for the purposes of recruiting. So at the moment, as you know, like Google and different platforms, they work really well for if your site is indexed for SEO purposes. We're really trying to find the purple squirrels, the needles in the haystack, the communities that you might not see and give them that visibility on the platform. So it's a conversation interface where you can go in and just chat to it and ask it what you want. And then it will lead you to the sources. We always provide the sources. So you can go directly to the sources of where you get that information. Yeah.
How, like from a sourcing perspective, what is the back end? Like, does it integrate to your ATS? So you're like tapping into past applicants? Does it integrate to LinkedIn? Like, how is it pulling candidates at that point?
Yeah. So the, like, as we were talking about earlier, kind of a lot of the research, there's a lot of information that already exists about you and about me, but it's not in one place. So we aggregate that all into one place and find all of the links on where people may live. So for one person, you might have 5 or 10 different social sites that you're looking for. So that's one way to do it. As far as like the ATS, we have an open API and we're starting to integrate with a few enterprise clients. But right now it's like product-led growth. You can go on, get a free trial, try it out for yourself and just get access immediately. We are thinking about the companies that we should start to do integrations with, but we want to make sure they're aligned to kind of our mission and vision as well. And we've got good partners there. So that's how it works right now.
Well, important question here. Where can listeners and viewers get the app? You mentioned there's a free trial. People want to check it out. Where can they do so?
Yeah, so they can go on to a link that says eq.app, and then directly on that link, you can get access. We'll also, for following this, we'll create a special code for Lars. So if you do if you add in Lars Schmidt, then you will get a discount. And Lars and I are going to discuss what that discount should be. So you should say,
breaking news. This is great. No, that's exactly. Awesome. I appreciate that. We'll definitely share that in the Amplify Talent community as well. Predictions are so hard, but I'm going to leave you with a prediction. Actually, I'm going to leave you with a question about a prediction. Like when you think about how AI, the velocity of adoption of AI, especially in, you know, just the world of work, right? We're seeing companies like Klarna, you know, have a tool that's replacing customer service representatives. We're seeing Cognition having tools that are, you know, allegedly able to replace software engineers. And so we will start to see the impact on the loss of jobs through AI this year. We will also see jobs being gained in different areas. So it's not a net, you know, a complete loss, but fast forward a year, it's not fair to ask you to do anything more than a year. Yeah. So I won't do that, but like we're having this conversation in April 2025, like, what do you think the world of work is going to be looking like as it relates to like how we're leveraging AI in HR and recruiting?
So I think it depends on the level that you're operating at. And I'll break it down a little bit. I think if you're in executive search, not much will change apart from the fact that you'll have more knowledge and around your candidates, because you kind of operate like an agency model, like a sports team, where you have the stable of candidates that you take out to market. I think for the high frequency, high volume, so if we go into the other end of the spectrum, you're going to see that the majority of the administration tasks are automated fully end to end when communicating with candidates until they are on assignment. So I think that you're going to start to see that. Then if you kind of flip it slightly and you think about who your stakeholders are, I think there's going to be an expectation that when you're speaking to a stakeholder, that you know more about the stakeholder than you would otherwise. Like when the internet first came out, it's like, oh, you didn't Google that person or do your research. I think research is going to be like table stakes. So that building those relationships is going to be down to how much you know about those individuals and how proactive you are. So I think the state of recruitment will become more proactive than reactive. And I think that's good news for those that are thinking about what's next. And also good news for those that want to let go of parts of their job that are repetitive, their administration, and so on and so forth. So I think that's the next year. And I'll go a little bit further because we did kind of mention that 18 to 24 months. I think at some point there's going to be parts that are going to be fully autonomous. And those parts will be what I'll call plays. So you'll press play and there'll be a part of that workflow that will be fully autonomous. It might be from, hey, Lars, you want to find a UX designer. We'll do everything all the way through that process with using AI to get those UX designers in your calendar tomorrow. I think all you have to do is request a UX designer, and that's going to happen. That might be 18, 24 months out. So anything that you're doing in between that isn't about having a sensible, reasonable, useful conversation with a stakeholder, it won't really matter. The AI will be able to do that better.
Yeah. You know, that last use case that you gave, I like that because I also think, I mean, I like that obviously from a recruiting perspective, right? Efficiency is great. But I also like that because I think that the way that we think about employment is also changing, right? Like we're not joining companies where we expect to be there for 5 or more years. They're certainly not expecting to have us for, you know, that long. And we've seen all the layoffs, particularly in tech in the US over the last couple of years. And I think that there's less of a sense of loyalty between the employee-employer relationship. So I think, you know, people, we used to talk about active or passive job seekers. I don't know that really matters anymore. It's talent and it's openness or not. And it doesn't really matter whether you're active. If you're open, I can have a conversation with you, you know, in theory. And so maybe there is a platform where like you opt in and say, hey, like I'm a UX designer, like in your scenario, sure, I'd want to hear about companies that offer X, Y, and Z. Here are my criteria. If somebody presses the find me a UX designer in a company that matches that criteria, go ahead. Here's my calendar. Schedule a meeting. Like that doesn't sound like science fiction. Like I think that also is consistent with how, you know, I think different generations now are thinking about the employer-employee relationship. So Marcus, we could go on for another hour. I think we're going to have to get a part 2 of this, but I do want to be mindful of time and your time. What is the best way if the audience wants to, you know, follow your work after the podcast, what's the best way for them to do that?
Simple way is on LinkedIn. So just first name, last name with 2 R's on LinkedIn. And then I typically post and publish information and stuff that we're doing mainly there. And then, as I mentioned before, on eq.app, we have blogs and articles and resources around leveraging and using AI.
Great. Well, keep up the work. I appreciate your leadership and your voice in the space. I like learning from you and grateful for you to make time to allow the audience to learn from you as well.
No, really appreciate the time, Lars, and honored to be on the pod. And yeah, excited to hear all the feedback from your community.
All right, have a good day.
Cheers.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of LinkedIn Presents Redefining Work. For more information on the podcast, past episodes, future guests, and more, be sure to check out our website at amplifytalent.com/redefining-work. And if you want to connect with me directly, you can find me on my website at larsschmidt.com, or feel free to post on social using the hashtag #redefiningwork, and I will find you. And if you dig this podcast, I'd love for you to share it with your peers and your friends and help them discover it. And if you really dig this podcast, please leave a review on whatever podcast delivery your ears prefer. I'll see you next week.